Welcome to Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And now for your weekly recap, a timely review of this week's top headlines and takeaways. Here's your host.
Welcome to Inside Towers Week in Review. I'm Leslie Stimson, Inside Towers Washington Bureau Chief. With me are John Celentano, our business editor, and Sharp Smith, our technology editor. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. The 2023 Volume 1 issue is available now. An annual subscription includes an exclusive briefing. In fact, one was just held on April 13th. If you want to access that briefing, you can become a subscriber and you will be given a link. Just go to our website. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. So, John, I think you're going to talk about T-Mobile. Is that right?
Yes, Leslie, I did an article this week that took a close look at fixed wireless access, which is really one of the fastest growing broadband segments in our industry today. T-Mobile and Verizon are out front with growing their subscriber base in fixed wireless access very quickly. What they're doing is using excess spectrum capacity on their 5G network, particularly in mid-band frequencies like C-band, that Verizon is deploying, and the 2.5 gigahertz that T-Mobile has been using for some time now. You know, in the past year, T-Mobile added 2 million subscribers to grow to 2.6 million by the end of the year. Verizon added another million, and they came in at about 1.4 million fixed wireless broadband subscribers by year end. Just keep in context, you know, the fixed wireless access, even though it's a fast growing segment, is still a tiny percentage of their overall mobile customer base. You know, it represents about 2% for T-Mobile and only really 1% for Verizon. But, you know, T-Mobile is the story here. They got off to a quick start early in the year and, ramped up several hundred thousand subscribers a quarter. But then in the second half of 2022, it kind of went flat on them. And in fact, they actually registered a decline in new ads. I mean, they still added 500,000 subscribers, but it was down from the prior quarter. The company said that, they attributed the drop off to being partially offset by increased deactivations from a growing customer base. We interpreted that as maybe customers aren't really happy with the service and have decided to give it back. We originally estimated a churn rate of about 10% from those numbers, but then T-Mobile, who is an ardent reader of Inside Towers, came back and said, whoa, wait a minute, it's not that high. So, you know, we recalculated and sure enough, it came in closer to 2.5%. But be that as it may, where we have a new market, fast growing, adding subscribers, and then all of a sudden you see a downturn, raises some questions. Why did this happen? You know, is this a one quarter event, or are we looking at maybe a trend here? So I think the next couple of quarters will be very telling in terms of how the rollout of fixed wireless access on the cellular network will continue to take place. T-Mobile is projecting, by 2025, they'll level out at about 7 to 8 million fixed wireless access subscribers. And that's, having passed, and they claim they passed today, 50 million households, and about a third of those in rural markets. So their expectation is they're going to continue to grow this business. You know, by comparison, Verizon is projecting about 4 to 5 million fixed wireless access subscribers by the end of 2025, when they think that'll be kind of the penetration that they'll achieve. So we looked at a couple of reasons why this fall off may have happened. And so, you know, one may be that it's not working as advertised because it's sharing cellular spectrum. When call volumes go up and this band gets congested, the fixed wireless access subscribers get throttled and the priority is given to the mobile subscribers. Secondly, prices are appealing, but, you know, price alone might not be enough. They both have come out with flat rate plans, unlimited data use, no contracts. Prices range $50 to $80 a month for new subscribers, $25 to $40 if you're an existing mobile subscriber and you include auto pay and you have an existing plan. But, you know, if the service isn't right, customers are just going to turn in the wireless routers that they get from the carriers to get the signal. You know, it's not everywhere. I mentioned the coverage that T-Mobile is at today. But it's not everywhere. And certainly people who might be interested in the service can't get it. And finally, you know, broadband competition is fierce. I mean, you have the cable companies that are fighting back with their own branded mobility services. You have other fiber broadband companies in the air in metro areas that are pitching their services as more reliable and faster speeds. Certainly Verizon is going head-to-head with T-Mobile for 5G mobility and fixed wireless access. And of course, in small communities and rural areas where T-Mobile claims to have a big footprint or is building a big footprint, you know, you're running into wireless internet service providers who really are the, have been for some time, the provider of choice for wireless internet. So, this is a, you know, we're going to watch over the next couple of quarters how this plays out. In fact, the earnings calls get underway next week and run for next several weeks. And what we're going to watch with interest what T-Mobile reports as far as its numbers. So there you have that, a big story that it's got a lot of attention right now. I did want to add another point I wrote about this week is about Cornerstone in the UK. Cornerstone is a big tower company in the UK that handles and manages towers for Vodafone and Telefonica that operate in the UK. It has about 15,000 towers. Telefonica and Vodafone are joint owners with a 50% share each, but there's a lot of interest by other tower company, independent tower companies that who might be willing to invest in Cornerstone and take a portion of that equity. You have the American tower companies that are kind of hovering and looking for opportunities in Europe as well, but you know, Telefonica owns its share through Virgin Mobile O2, which is jointly owned by Telefonica and Liberty Global. And then Vodafone, of course, owns its share through a subsidiary company that's part of Vantage Towers. And Vantage thinks it's a natural buyer of the remaining 50%, you know, of Cornerstone. And maybe the logical choice, but there's been no formal offers yet for any share of Cornerstone. But you know, and Telefonica in its 2022 earnings call suggested that you know, it's still a value part of their operation, and they currently have no firm plans to sell anything. You know, the CEO of Telefonica characterized Cornerstone as a very attractive infrastructure asset. And it's actually one of the few large mobile operator-owned tower companies in Europe. You know, there's already been divestitures of towers by European carriers, namely Deutsche Telekom, where they sold out GT Towers to Digital Bridge and Brookfield last year. American Tower bought 31,000 towers that were owned by Telexius, which was a Telefonica subsidiary. with towers in Europe and Latin America. So, you know, and Cellnex has been buying into carrier owned tower tower assets as well. So Cornerstone is kind of an attractive asset that may be up for acquisition. Certainly the companies that own Cornerstone could benefit by selling off these assets to raise money, to pay down debt, to invest in their networks. We had one estimate that a 25% share of Cornerstone might be valued at about $3.6 billion. So we're going to wait and see. This is kind of a growing story. I think there is interest in selling on the part of the owners, and interest in buying if they can come to a price agreement on prices by independent tower companies that are looking at the European market. So we'll keep tabs on that too.
Thank you, John. Sharp, I think you're going to talk about 5G networks. Is that right?
Yes, Leslie. Sort of dubbed what John had talked about with the fixed wireless access, which is just one of the ways that the carriers are planning to monetize their 5G networks. And so this is, I think this is sort of it's a fun period of time in terms of the generation, this generation or any generation really of technology, as you go from the build out to beginning the adoption phase. And while the build out is not by any stretch of the imagination completed, the adoption phase has begun, and so we're seeing interesting deployments and uses of the technology. And one of them that we covered this week was the Naval Air Station Whidbey, it's on Whidbey Island off of Washington State, and they really just did the ribbon cutting. So it's just been turned on. It's a private 5G network, and it was deployed by Hughes Network Systems, which is the system integrator, and they worked with Boingo Wireless, Cisco, Dell, Dish Wireless, JMA Wireless, and Intel. So you can see just how many companies it takes to put one of these systems together, even though it's a private system that's relegated to technically an island. It's part of another trend that that we see with the Department of Defense, really driving the access of Open RAN technology, and they want their equipment made here in the U.S. of A. They want to have total control over that supply chain, and so you won't see equipment that's been made overseas at work at any of our defense stations. And so that was one interesting story. The other one that I liked was has to do with network slicing, and that's another way that the carriers can take their existing systems, and through software they create a temporary network within a network that's private. And in this case, it was they created a it was for a marathon over in Korea, and actually not Korea, Taiwan. And it was a combination of Ericsson working with Far Eastone Telecommunications. What they're basically doing with this is they're backhauling the radio signal from each one of the cameras back to the control station. And so they need a lot of bandwidth, and they cannot suffer any buffering or anything like that. You've got 11,000 runners, from 33 countries, and you know, an area that spans a 26 mile course. So you have to basically be able to create your own network. It has to be super low latency with super high bandwidth, be able to run a lot of video through the air. And so that will be something that we'll be enjoying. I enjoy seeing the different applications for 5G. And it's a way that the carriers can monetize, which they have to be able to find new uses and new sources of funding to pay for all this equipment, all this spectrum. So watch this space. There'll be a lot more to come.
Thank you. I was going to ask what kind of a marathon, but then you answered it in your piece. It's a runner's marathon. I was trying to think of, I wasn't sure. Thank you, Sharp.
What other type of marathon is there?
I don't know. I was thinking dance marathon.
Dance marathon. Not a lot of television coverage for the dance marathons. You seem to be stuck back in the 40s, I think.
I know. So T-Mobile, if I can get to my story here. Yeah, T-Mobile would like Congress to reauthorize the FCC spectrum auction authority. So would have a lot of other companies, but T-Mobile is actually lobbying for this. It wants to use the 2.5 gigahertz spectrum licenses that it won at auction in Auction 108 last summer. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel has said they can do some things behind the scenes related to that auction, but they can't actually issue the licenses. Four former general counsels for the FCC thinks it can. So there's been a lot of back and forth. Do they have the ability? Do they not? President of Technology for T-Mobile, Neville Ray, said in a blog that, the company's been stuck in a regulatory limbo with the spectrum won in auction 108, and they want to use it to, they think they're going to be able to use a lot of it in rural areas. So he said they will boost speeds and bring mid-band 5G to consumers for the first time in some places. Many of the licenses sold cover rural areas where the spectrum has been dormant, basically sitting on a shelf at the FCC for nearly 30 years. So we'll see how this turns out. T-Mobile says it continues to press its case with lawmakers. And then there was a convoluted, long-time broadcast story I worked on. This KPCQ, an Idaho AM station, negotiated for a year with the FCC. It finally got a one-year license, but it was hard to get that because, the FCC rules, if you've been off the air for 12 consecutive months, your license automatically reverts back to them so they can reissue it, re-auction it. This station had a bunch of calamities related to its towers. When it bought the station, Ted Dawson Jr. bought it from Snake River Radio. He told his attorney, please tell the FCC we don't really have access to this tower site because it's being used by the former licensee. And the attorney apparently told the FCC the tower was being dismantled. So that led to a lot of miscommunication, and which didn't get corrected for a long time. What was really happening was the tower site was owned by a third party, a home builder. They wanted to put houses on it. So they, what they had done was put the former licensee on a month-to-month lease and said, you know, we can yank this lease at any time. So there were a bunch of special temporary authorities filed for and gained by KPCQ. And the upshot was they finally straightened it all out. And but they did admit they were off the air for long periods of time, but not for 12 months consecutively. They found a new tower site. They had a new tower built. They returned to the air. And then for a while, they were using a long wire, and construction at the tower site bumped them off the air again. I mean, it was all this stuff going on. But finally, an administrative law judge wrote that, yes, the station's brief periods of operation, which required the permission of the site owner, the home builder, while it was redeveloping the site, it enabled the company to maintain its license as part of a longer-term effort to move the station. But really, since it was off the air so much during the 12 months, it really wasn't serving the public interest. So that's why we're just giving it a one-year license. So I thought it was an interesting story because of the whole tower snafu angle, but we'll see. So that's a wrap for the week's news. Thank you for listening to Inside Towers Week in Review. And for a complete rundown of all the week's stories, please check out our Saturday edition. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.